From Nashville, Tennessee, Music City, USA, and the home of hot chicken, it's the Rick Altizer Show. Sit back, buckle up. Rick will talk with the movers, shakers, and creators who put Christ in Christian entertainment. He's a man who's clear so the world can hear. Here's Rick Altizer.
Hey, thank you for listening today. This is the Rick Altizer Show. That's right. That was Bob Allen who's introducing me. That was right. And I got again part two with my pastor, Mike Graham. Mike, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
If you missed last week's show, you can go to my podcast page, The Rick Altizer Show. You can go to my website, rickaltizer.com, and you can hear it there. And I do suggest you do that. We had a great talk about the book, the new book that he wrote. He has a new book out. Let me say that. It's called Cheer Up, The Life and Ministry of Jack Miller. It's available now on Amazon. And we spoke last week about Jack Miller, about his contribution to what we now call the Grace Movement. People who have been influenced by Jack Miller, you might know them. Tim Keller, John Piper, John MacArthur, R.C. Sproul.
I don't know about John MacArthur. Jerry Bridges and would be one key person that
so he's had great impact, and yeah. We talked about him and the book last week, so I do encourage you to go check that out. And so where we left off last week, we were talking about this the course Sonship that Jack kind of put together for basically people, ministers in Uganda who were just kind of burned out, and they just were operating in self-reliance and self-sufficiency and needed the gospel. And so this whole concept, and we talked about this last week, about the gospel is for Christians. It's for us. Yeah. We tend to think it's for non-Christians, but no, it's us.
Yeah.
And we need the gospel. We need to be living it. We need to be sharing it. We need to be sharing it with each other every day. That gospel that tells me I'm worse than I think I am.
Yeah.
And that tells me grace goes beyond what I can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
And again, all that was in last week. I was kind of giving the last week on the Rick Altizer Show. But we kind of ended last week on the concept in Sonship. What I had said was, when I took this course, I had no idea how self righteous I was. I had no idea how judgmental I was. I was really blind to those things in myself, and that is the as I said last week, the insidiousness of self-righteousness is that it blinds you to these things.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know. Basically, I was functioning. I was functional. I was in church, leading worship, doing home group, and leading a home group and teaching and men's ministry, all kinds of, making Christian movies, but an orphan.
Yeah.
An orphan. Yeah. Not really believing I have a father who loves me, not really believing I have a dad who cares about me. I can believe it for you. I can totally believe God is going to move in your life. I can pray for you and believe it, that God's going to do this for you. But then when it comes for me, deep down, I'm struggling with believing that God's going to answer my prayer, that he's really that concerned, and maybe I ought to go get in a little bit of self-sufficiency and take care of some things, because I'm not so sure he's going to do it. So can we talk about the Father? And as you know, I'm working on a movie called Show Me the Father, which is discussing this issue. But I would like to talk about orphanhood in the church. And then I'd like for you to talk about your own experience with your own dad.
Okay. Yeah, in John, Jesus says, I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. And an orphan is someone who is living self-dependent, independent from God, a life, as if God is not there. As if God did not create you and he did not recreate you, as if he did not send Jesus and he did not send his spirit. Now, in Uganda, they couldn't live with a religion of self-reliance because they had Uganda's Hitler with Idi Amin, and he just slaughtered people. And so there was orphans everywhere. when Jack and them started going over in 1979 all the way up through, they had all these orphans. So this is the kind of the context of these orphans. They had no parents and they had to take care of themselves. And if you when Jack was growing up, he lost his dad when he was 2 years old. And it was a devastating time of poverty and just fractured relationships. And then he had an abusive stepfather. And so he lived his life as an orphan. So a way of saying that is to live your life independent from God as if you have no father. And so in the church today, especially in North America, we have so much prosperity and so even as bad as you may think things are today, we have so much that we actually think we can live a self-reliant lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And so God has to send these things. In many ways, COVID coming today is this realization of how limited and small we are. And to be able to look and see God as Father. So when we talk about an orphan mentality, an orphan spirit, I'm not necessarily talking about the beautiful, cute little babies that we adopt. It's the as we grow up having been created by God and we grow up thinking we can live life on our own terms, thinking we're big enough to control our own destinies, to captain our own ship, and just live this false illusion of self-reliance. Now, the way that I guess I can transition into my own relationship with my father and how that just engendered an orphan mentality in my life. And as I've watched your movie, what you see is this, there's a standard of the father, and then we kind of look at God as our father through the lens of our experience with our earthly father. And from that, we say, I don't want that. I don't want that father if you've had a bad experience with your father. In some testimonies, people have good experience with their father, but there's a lot of fractured lives today where their father's just been abandoned in different ways, abandoned the home. And my father never really abandoned the home. I grew up in Bayou La Batre, Alabama, which is on the southwest coast of Alabama, and my dad was on the boat for the first decade of my life. He was gone 8 months out of the year, and I was glad when he was gone. He was really harsh. Hard, like many people down in on the coast are. Same with Jack, and out on the he was from southwest Oregon, a very rural fishing area, tough people making life work, and so my dad and I didn't get along at all, and he was very demanding. Rick is teaching me how to emote. Rick, I'm his pastor, but he's teaching me how to handle emotions because I've been so emotionally stilted for so long. And just, but I remember when it happened, I excelled in athletics when I was growing up. You want me to get into this part of the story?
Absolutely.
I excelled in athletics when I was growing up and did really, really well. And there was, I remember one particular game in my senior year of high school when I'd scored both touchdowns, kicked both extra points, kicked the game-winning field goal, and then intercepted three passes in one game. And I thought, surely my dad, who's the most monolithic figure in my life, surely he will now say, I'm proud of you, son. Good job. And it was small school. And I went outside, and there's this, moderate-sized group of people waiting for the players to come out, and I got outside, and I went straight to my dad. I cut through the crowd, went to my dad, and I said, hoping he would say, well done. That's what everybody wants to hear from their father. Well done. I'm proud of you. And he said, you're the worst blocker I've ever seen. And it was that day that I decided that my dad was never going to give me what I wanted. He was never going to say good job. And so I decided that the best way to deal with that reality was to harden my heart and to become an orphan, if you will, an orphan-minded spirit, to say, I'm just going to live independently of my father's affection. I'm going to live independently. I'm not going to expect anything from him, because every time I expect something from him, it just hurts when you don't get it, right? And so I determined to hate him, and I did for decades. And I went on I think that's why sonship was so important for me, because it's what God used to break into my hardened heart that had been self-protective. Sometimes we harden our heart. If we're in sin, we harden our heart so we can keep doing what we want. We also harden our heart when people hurt us so that they can't hurt us again. Kind of the Davy Jones locker kind of thing. Just bury your heart somewhere and nobody can get to it. And that really messes up all your relationships, and it really affects your marriage. It affects your children. Unless you have a gospel apparatus that can get to those central places in your heart, you're dead before you ever start. And spiritually dead, I think, is what the Bible speaks of. So God has to come in with the gospel and spiritually recreate your heart and take this broken heart and replace it with a new heart. Take this broken spirit and replace it with a new spirit. And the way he does that is with his gospel. And so he did that in my life, but it was still independent of my father. I still, it took a long time. My father, he just was hard to approach. And, you know, usually people can only give what they receive. So I started seeing my father, instead of looking at him and hating him, I started looking at him through the lens of the gospel to see that he was a sinner like I am. And that he could only give what he received. And he got, and as I started doing more family history research, I realized that's the way he grew up. And that's the way his father treated him. And that's the only thing he knew. And in our church, you really didn't hear the gospel. You heard God is good, God is great, and you may pray these kind of prayers. But there was never any, you know, anything like Jack Miller was talking about. I'd never heard in my entire life. And so that was a big shift. Well, let me just fast forward to tell you a little bit so you don't end on just a bad news of father and how God redeems those relationships. My dad had a stroke in 2004, and this was multiple decades. Our family stayed away from dad with my kids. I had four kids, got married, had four kids, and we just stayed away. And then he had a stroke. And it was on the side of his brain that he could still talk and hear, but he couldn't see. And also because of the time it took to get from the coast into Mobile to get to the hospital, everyone knew that they couldn't stop the swelling and he was going to die. But it gave us an extra 12 hours of consciousness before he died. And so we jumped in I was living in Nashville. We jumped in our car and I drove down and we were all – as a family, me and the other five siblings were gathered around his deathbed, and I was a middle child, and I was at the head of his bed, and he had all this stuff coming out of his bed and out of his all these tubes and stuff, and he took those last moments to just go around the room and just bless his children. I recently watched the part of blessing in your movie from Tony
Evans.
And my dad did that. He went around and blessed. God had been working on him and changing him, but I couldn't give him room to change that he needed to change. And he skipped over me, even though I was a middle child. He skipped over me, went to the other siblings, and then he came back, and I was at the head of his bed looking down at his face, and I thought he was going to skip me and not say anything, and, you know, I was hard to that anyway. And it was like, okay. He said, "Michael." And I said, "Yes, Dad, I'm here." He said, "You remember that game?" I couldn't believe he brought it up. I said, "Yeah, I remember." He said, "I am so sorry. I have always been too hard on you." Shocked. I'm pretty sure those were the last words he ever said. It may be that I just completely blanked out and he said some other things and I just couldn't hear anything else. But I think those were the last words he said. And then he died. And I remember being so angry at God. Other members of the family would say, "Aren't you glad he said that? Aren't you glad he brought that up?" And I was angry because now my dad had finally said the thing that I most wanted to hear. He said, "I'm proud of you." On his deathbed. And I couldn't talk back to him. He was gone. And man, that was the beginning of the thawing of my heart, but it took a while.
It's like, gee, Dad, you waited to the very, very absolute last minute, your last breath, couldn't you have done this 10 years ago?
And by the time, as a preacher, I preached his funeral, I was still somewhat angry, and some people came up afterwards, maybe over the next month or so, and who contacted me and said, hey, you're really hard on your dad. So it took a while, but let me tell you, I would not trade anything for those words from him. Even though I was mad initially, that's just because I was an angry person, because I was living like an orphan. And I was living like an orphan. Some people live like an orphan because they just want to control their own life. Some people live like an orphan because they just want to stop the people that are supposed to love them to stop hurting them. Yeah. Some people live like an orphan because they've had leaders like Idi Amin come in and slaughter their parents. And they have to live like an orphan. All they know, this is the only way I can survive.
Is I got to take care of myself.
Yeah, I got to take care of myself because nobody else loves me. Nobody else is going to take care of me. And then Jesus comes into that. And this is what he said. He says, I will not leave you as an orphan.
You're listening to the Rick Altizer Show on Bot Radio. My guest today is author and also my pastor, Mike Graham. He's written a book called Cheer Up, new book, The Life and Ministry of Jack Miller. And we're talking about, even though we're talking about Mike's life, this is modeled in what Jack taught, and a lot of the freedom Mike has experienced has come from what Jack has taught. And the book is available on Amazon. It's through P&R Books. So I'd like to ask, this relationship with your dad, you've realized I'm not going to get from him what I need. He's not going to ever really give me what I need. And so you navigate life that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on my own.
Yeah.
Then you have this moment of faith where you come to faith and you recognize Christ as your, and you become a, you know, you live as a Christian. Can you talk to me about your own personal struggles with projecting onto God the traits of your earthly father, and how that's affected your own walk with God?
Yeah, so God to me, so we grew up in a church, actually. I didn't grow up outside the church. And I remember one time I came and I was in high school. I think I just got in high school, and I went to the school, and my mom and dad were coming out of the teacher's lounge in this small Southwest Alabama town. They had been invited in to talk to the faculty about what they were doing that was causing their children to be so much better than other children. Literally, that's what happened. I didn't know that until I asked them why they were there. And I was just shocked because all of us were performers. We excelled. My other siblings were very smart academically and athletically. They excelled. And you just had to be on this performance treadmill all the time. And so what you did is you learned how to live a duplicitous life. You learned how to live two lives. I think you and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday about how you had this separated self. And then when you have a separated self, you've got yourself that you are in relationship with, but you can't be in relationship with these people because they hurt you or whatever. Or you can become a victim. You may be the one doing the hurt. So in this case, you know, it was easy for me to have a dark life where I would go out on the shrimp boats when I was icing them up or fueling them up and just kind of look at all the pornography and get addicted to pornography without anybody. I mean, I could have that and then I could go to church on Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you learn how to live this separated life, this ambivalence. You're torn apart. You're more than one person. And you don't know how to have integrity and to be whole, right? And so I think I'm getting at your question, but I think I forgot. Tell me your question.
So then how do I then project those traits in my, and how does that relate to your own walk with God?
So I had projected onto God this image of my father that he was austere, he was harsh, you could never do enough to please him. To please God. You're always on this performance treadmill. In theological terms, I kind of looked at God as the judge through the law that said, be perfect even as your heavenly father is perfect, which is a true statement, but there was never any way out from under that. And so the way I managed that was I had the one Christian life that went to church and did well in sports and never got in trouble in public. And then I had the private life that was full of lust and full of, you know, rebellion and go to hell, God, go to hell, Dad, that kind of thing. I'm going to do my own thing, and I'm stubborn, and nobody's going to tell me what they can do. And this was the real Mike over here. Mm-hmm. And so I had projected that onto God, and I began to hate God even while I was going to church. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I remember one time praying in my basement. We'd been going through Sonship, and I started to pray. And I, you know, the religious Mike would pray, God, I love you and I want to honor you, which is a crock. And Jesus called me on that. As I was praying, I was getting ready for one of these Sonship lessons. It was on the law and the gospel. And I said, God, I love you and I want to honor you. He said, you don't love me. You love yourself. And all this religious stuff that you do that other people get to see, that's just for show. And you love yourself and you want to honor yourself and you want to live for your own glory. And everything you're doing is from your own self-centeredness, even your religious stuff. And you think all this other Mike over here, this bad Mike, this separated self, the dark or the shadow self, as you talked about yesterday, you think I don't know about those things. I know all about them. And I know that all the good works that you're doing, they're a fraud too. And it just cut me to the heart that I could live this duplicitous life, this fake life, this fraudulent life. Here I was, and I started crying, which, you know, for someone who has a separated self and you harden your heart, you don't cry. Mm-hmm. And I started crying, and I was like, I couldn't. It was like Jesus put his hand over my mouth, and I couldn't even say a word. And kind of like the Romans, you know, no one is righteous, no, not one. And I was just silent, only crying. And then I heard, this is the Mike Graham that I died for. This one right here, this fraud, this one who's got this duplicitous life. I'm your father. It was then that Jesus, through the power of the gospel, pulled me back into a whole person so that I could be honest with him for the first time. And I could be honest about my own need for grace. And at that time, we had been going through Sonship, and I was hearing for the first time that the gospel was for Christians. And so there was a foundation that I had to turn to. There was more grace. God gives more grace. He resists the proud. And so he dealt with my proud heart, my self-reliant heart, and broke me finally. Now, I don't mean to say that since then I've not ever been self-reliant. It's like the blood in your veins. It's the remaining sin in your body, as Romans says. That's self-reliance, doing it on your own, living like an orphan. So I think that orphan spirit is when the Father is there and he's giving us the Spirit and we just say no to him. We're going to live life on our own. And then we go to him when things get bad. Mm-hmm. And then we get angry at him when things are bad, when actually he's the Lord of the storm making things bad, so we'll quit relying on ourselves.
Yeah, it's a beautiful picture of what we talked about last week. Cheer up. You're worse than you think you are.
Yeah.
Why would that cheer me up? When I finally come to see my sin, it drives me to Christ.
And to collapse into my Father's love that Christ,
this loving,
the love
gracious,
of God, poured out in our hearts.
Well, Mike, we're out of time again.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you believe that?
Yes, I can.
We're talking about the new book, Cheer Up. The Life and Ministry of Jack Miller. It's available on Amazon. If you like what you're hearing here, that's what's in the book. This is life-changing stuff we're talking about here. Seeing God as a loving Father. Mike, thank you so much
for
opening up, sharing, and making that statement come to life for us. Thank you so much for being on the show, and hope the book does great. Glad to hear the first run sold out already, so that's great. Thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate being here. And I just want to pray that anybody that hears this would just know that just their Father loves them through Jesus Christ.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. Thanks. If there's a show you've missed, you can go to my website, rickaltizer.com, and catch up. Or you can listen to my podcast in iTunes or wherever you hear your podcasts. Just search for The Rick Altizer Show. Altizer is spelled A-L-T-I-Z-E-R. I want to thank you for listening. Hey, would you tell a friend about this show and share the love? Be sure to check us out again next week as we discuss how we communicate the gospel through media to our culture. Let's be clear so the world can hear. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.